कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 6. Shri Narada Uvacha Shrutva Putra Giro Daitya Parapaksha Samahitaha Jahasa Buddhir Balanam Bhidyate Parabuddhi Bihi श्रीनारद उवाच श्रुत्वा पुत्रगिरो दैत्यः परपक्षसमाहिताः जहास बुद्धिर्बालानां भिद्यते परबुद्धिभिः
Thank you. ladies, please.
Srinarada Uvacha. Narada Muni said, Shrutva, hearing, Putra Giraha, the instructive words of his son, Daityaha, Hiranyakashipu, Parapaksha, on the side of the enemy, Samahitaha, full of faith, Jahasa, laughed, Buddhi, the intelligence, Balanam, of small boys, Bhidyate, is polluted, Parabuddhivihi, by instruction from the enemy's camp. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Narada Muni continued, when Prahlad Maharaj spoke about the path of self-realization in devotional service, thus being faithful to the camp of his father's enemies, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, heard Prahlad's words and he laughingly said, thus is the intelligence of children spoiled by the words of the enemy. Purport. Hiranyakashipu, being a demon, would always consider Lord Vishnu and his devotees to be his enemies. Therefore, the word parapaksha, on the side of the enemy, is used here. Hiranyakashipu never agreed with the words of Vishnu or Krishna. Rather, he was angered by the intelligence of a Vaishnava. Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, says, Sarvadharman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. But demons like Hiranyakashipu never agree to do this. Therefore Krishna says, Namam duskriti no mudhaha prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya pahrta jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 15. The asura bhava, atheistic nature, is directly represented by Hiranyakashipu. Such persons, being mudha and naradhama, fools and rascals, the lowest of men, would never accept Vishnu as the supreme and surrender to him. Hiranyakashipu naturally became increasingly angry that his son Prahlad was being influenced by the camp of the enemies. He therefore asked that saintly persons like Narada not be allowed within the residential quarters of his son, for otherwise Prahlad would be further spoiled by Vaishnava instructions. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gora Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yesterday we heard Prahlad Maharaj instruct his father, and it's described the way he instructed. He called him Asuravarya, the best of the demons. For Hiranyakashipu, that was a great compliment, that his son finally understood, oh, he's calling me the best of the demons. And it is true in the sense that Prahlad was very respectful. Even though his father was a demon, he was very respectful. He called him Asuravarya, you're the best among the Asuras. At the same time, he didn't cower or was not afraid to say the truth that, unlike others great sages, you should go to the forest. Specifically, Vanam Gatoyam is Vrindavan. You should go to Vrindavan and look for Krishna there. Yet Harim Ashrayeta, you should take shelter of Lord Vishnu. Now Hiranyakashipu is angry, at the same time he's laughing. He's laughing because he knows he's Asuravarya, he's the greatest of the demons. So he says, Shutva Putra Gira. Putra Gira means the words of his son. Daitya, the king of the demons. Parapaksha Samahitaha. Parapaksha. Paksha means side. Parapaksha means the other side. And he has so much faith, Samahitaha, the words of the persons on the other side. They are the devotees. Vishnu and his devotees. He says, Jahasa. Hasa means to laugh. Jahasa means to laugh loudly. He says, Jahasa buddhir balanam vidyate. That the intelligence of the children has been polluted. This word vidyate appears in the first canto, second chapter. In that series of verses, where Suta Goswami is describing what happens after one takes up devotional service. Chidyate hridaya grantis, bhidyate sarva samshayah. Bhidyate sarva samshaya. There it means one is freed of all doubts. Here it says bhidyate is polluted. The reason he's saying bhidyate is because something that is cleansing in Hiranyakashipu's perspective is polluting. Interesting, no? When someone is being given good advice, for Hiranyakashipu, that appears as bad advice. So he says bhidyate parabuddhibhi. Parabuddhibhi, that the other party's intelligence is being downloaded into these children's very tender, delicate, impressionable intelligence. And what is he downloading? Become devotee of Vishnu. Ha! How useless. Total waste of time. I don't like my children being indoctrinated. I don't like these young children, balanam. These young children being indoctrinated into something so horrible as devotional service. I want them to become ambitious. I want them to grow up to becoming the greatest leaders like me and rule over the world. What is this devotional service? And who's allowing this Narada to enter the palace? This Parabuddhivi, he knows, it's Narada's intelligence. He doesn't like that. I don't want my children to be influenced, all these young children to be influenced by this sage Narada Muni. He has a bad reputation of making devotees. My children are not meant to be devotees. Not just because they will develop good character. I don't care for that. They will become devotees of my enemy. How can I tolerate that? I don't like Vishnu. And if my children or all these children in our community are becoming devotees of Vishnu, it's the most unbearable thing. So it should not happen. And next verse is on, he follows with the instruction of what to do. So that's the mentality of Hiranyakashipu. So Prabhupada writes, he considers Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas to be his enemies. A person considers someone an enemy when they think that the other person is bent upon saying and doing things that I don't like. I don't feel that the other person is acting in my interest. Therefore, he's enemy. A friend, by definition, is one who's acting in my interest. Correct? Whoever says, I say, oh, I would like to go do something. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it together. That's my friend. So, according to an atheistic or non-devotional viewpoint of life, friend is defined as he or she who will partake in my sense gratification with me. And enemy is one who will tell me, hey, that's not good for you. So I will surround myself with those who will accept whatever I'm saying and doing, and keep those away who will tell me, that's not good for you. We call them the party poopers. You're spoiling everything for me. You're my enemy. There is so much fun. Why do you have to always spoil it for me? So in the life of a common person, the devotee first enters almost like an enemy. Because the only difference is that the devotee carries nothing but good interest, the complete good interest of another person. But they are seen as enemies. They're seen as, why are you changing my way of thinking? Why are you changing my way of living? Why do you care? Or what do you want from this? I don't want anything. I just want you to be happy. Really? And then our definition of happiness doesn't match. Ignorance by nature gives us an opposite picture of reality. That's the nature of ignorance. That's why this world is called a world of ignorance, because it gives us an opposite picture of the reality there. Absolute reality, and then there is what we call relative reality, a reflection. So ignorance makes us think of something different from its existence. So the Vedas use the standard example of a rope and snake. There is a rope in the dark, it looks like a snake. And when you turn on the light, it looks like a rope, or it is a rope. This rope and snake example is given because ignorance makes us see things that don't exist or is what is not. So that which is not is called Maya. Ma means not, Ya means that which is. So Maya, that which is not. So we take a rope to be a snake. We take the body to be the self. We take the mind to be the best friend. We take the mundane sense of happiness as true happiness. This is the nature of ignorance. It covers reality. And this ignorance has different grades, which manifests in people differently. That's this verse. One level of ignorance manifests in a person being a mudha, foolish. Another level of ignorance makes a person a naradhama, a lowest of mankind, nara adhama. Another, is called Mayaya Apahrita Jnana, or Jnani. And the final one is Asuram Bhavam, Ashritaha. These are the different grades categories of ignorance. The first is Mudha. Mudha means foolish. Foolish is that person who the truth is obvious, but they will not see it. Or more importantly, they're too busy to see it. They're so busy. Mudha is driven by fear. They're afraid that if I stop doing what I'm doing, I have nothing to live for. So I have to continue. Another aspect of Mudha mentality is others are doing it. If I don't do it, I'll be the odd man out. And I don't want to be the odd man out. Everyone's working hard. Everyone's trying to earn money. They're looking happy. Why should I change that? Why should I be the one? Why don't you try? Why are you asking me to do? Mudha is like that. It's part of the mob mentality. He is a subscriber, monthly subscriber to the Mob Mentality magazine. And he reads all the articles. Such and such person did, oh very good, I should also do like this. 50% of the population, 50% of the persons we surveyed said that you should sleep only 4 hours because you have to work very hard. I like that idea. 17% of the population suffers from stress because they're working very hard. I'll try to create some balance. I'll only work 70 hours a week. 36% of the... This is mentality. Our life is driven by statistics. We somehow find... I have a degree in statistics, so I know how things... And these numbers can be moved left, right and center the way you want to see it. So if we take shelter in the numbers... So much population thinks like this. It must be true though, right? If so many people are thinking. And Prabhupada would warn us against this popular thought idea. If 100 people think it's right, it must be right though. There's a story from the Panchatantra. I've said this many times. I like this story very much. So I'll say it again. There was a grandfather, this is about popular vote, or what's the phrase, vox populi. So, there was a grandfather and a grandson, and they owned an old donkey. So one day they decided to go from one village to another village. So, the grandfather made the child, however, the grandfather sat on the donkey, and they were walking. The child was walking along. So along the way they entered a small hamlet, and the entire hamlet gathered around these people and said, "Whoa, look at this." They were all child protection folks. And they said, "Look at this. How arrogant this old man is. He's nicely sitting on this donkey and the poor kid has to walk. What's going on?" Because everyone said it, they thought something's wrong. So the grandfather got down, put the kid on the donkey, and they walked along. They went into the next hamlet. And the next hamlet was all about, were all people who were about taking care of old people. And they gathered together and said, "What is this? This is Kali Yuga. Nowadays, children have no respect for the elderly. The poor old man is walking and this little kid who's strong is sitting on the donkey. How horrendous. What is this?" So then they were bewildered what to do. So they both sat on the donkey. And they walked into the next hamlet. And it was a hamlet where all the PETA people, people for ethical treatment for animals, they lived there. They all gathered and said, "Look at you human beings. You have absolutely no empathy and compassion for that poor old donkey. It's not enough that the donkey is old. Two of you have to sit on that fellow?" Then they were so bewildered. They said, "Why don't we carry the donkey? Maybe he's really too old. He needs a ride. We will carry the donkey. So they carried the donkey and they were crossing a bridge when the whole another hamlet of people got together and they started laughing. Look how foolish these people are. How foolish these people are. What, have you ever seen anyone carrying a donkey? And they started laughing so loudly and throwing stones and, you know, heckling so much that the donkey lost balance, the people lost balance. The donkey fell into the river and died. So always someone's voice, somehow the popular voice we accept as reality because our own conviction of things is not clear. There's another story like that. There was a Brahmin who had received a goat as charity. So he carried the goat on his shoulder and he was walking after performing his religious activities. He was taking the goat home. On the way, there were a few thieves who looked at the goat and said, "That will make a wonderful lunch." How do we get the goat from the Brahmin? Because you cannot make a Brahmin angry, right? He might curse. Then they may become goats. So they were wondering what to do. So they devised a plan. Yes, there were three or four thieves. They said, "We'll all stand a mile apart from each other. And when we meet the Brahmin, we will say something that bewilders his mind." So the first person saw, and I think he said, "Why are you carrying a rabbit on your shoulder?" Or something like that. I forget the details. "Why are you carrying a rabbit on your shoulder?" The Brahmin looked and he said, "This is not a rabbit. This is a goat." "Really? Look, goat? I didn't realize, but it looks like a rabbit to me." He said, "Foolish fellow. He doesn't know." He walked to the next mile. Another fellow met him and said, "Oh, nice rabbit." "It's not a rabbit. It's a goat." "Oh, it looks like a rabbit to me. Sorry." A third person, same guy, he said, "Nice rabbit." "Hey, you're the third. This is not a rabbit. It's a goat." And he went further. The fourth guy met him and said, "Oh, nice rabbit." He said, "Something must be wrong. I'm thinking it's a goat. Everyone else sees it as a rabbit. What am I going to do with the rabbit?" And he left the goat and went away. He thought he was seeing things. So Hiranyakashipu is afraid that his children's mind will get influenced by what others are saying, parapaksha. They're very delicate. Yeah, children are very impressionable. Whatever you say, and you say it again and again, gets into their mind. So he wants that the children should be told about materialism, about how to become successful and powerful in a material way. And he does not want their delicate intelligence to be influenced by boring subjects like devotional service. It's a waste of time, according to him. And more than that, it's not just a waste of time, it's the enemy. And my son is already beginning to speak like the enemy. Vanam gatoyam harimashrayeta. How dare he speak like that? Hitvatva patam grihamandhakupam. He's calling household life, materialistic household life, like a deep dark well. What is he talking about? Is he telling me that I'm living in a deep dark well? Is the enemy indoctrinating my son or these children? I don't want this to happen. So mudha mentality is driven out of fear and popular voice or vote. Naradhama, Nara Adhama means the lowest of men. The lowest of men has two meanings. One is really low in terms of birth and culture, who cannot think anything higher, who have no interest in thinking anything higher. But another meaning is that those who have and those who know the value of a cultured life, a value of devotional service, value of surrendering to Vishnu, They know it, but still they won't do it. The first category doesn't know it, doesn't want to know it, too busy. The second category is they know, but they don't want to do it. Because they don't fully, they're distracted by, or they find value in pursuing materialistic goals, while on one hand they understand the value of surrendering to Vishnu. They're weak. So they call Naradhama. Nara Adhama. So we sing in the morning, Adhama Janara Bandhu. Adhama Jana and Naradhama, the same thing. So the spiritual master is the Adhama Janara Bandhu. Bandhu means friend. He who tries to work and help us see the value of devotional service and build our conviction, strengthen our conviction that this is the right thing. Next is Mayaya Aphrita Jnana. Aphrita means stolen. Hrita means to take. Aphrita is to take away fully. Mayaya means stolen by Maya. And Maya steals, Maya gives money, Maya gives all the other facilities in the material world, but takes away or steals the intelligence. Because stealing intelligence means it takes away the ability to discern and discriminate that what I am actually being given has no value. Or another way of seeing it is Maya Aparhita Jnana means it steals away the real discernment and gives us the conviction that the foolish things in life are very valuable. If you tell someone, here's a piece of glass, and say, this is a diamond, it is a precious jewel. A person who's not intelligent enough to discern the difference between a broken piece of glass and a jewel will accept it as, oh, this is a very precious stone. Something very valuable. What do you have? I have many pieces of broken glass. They're very valuable. And Maya's ability is in convincing us, yes, there's a lot of value in that. Collect them more and more. Therefore, you see people collecting things that are really not of much value. So Maya Aparhita Jnanis are those persons who, on the basis of, in the pursuit of real knowledge, real, actually systematically weaken absolute knowledge. We call them scientific persons who are scientifically inclined. Through logic and rationality. Because what appears meaningful to logic and rationality, that knowledge hides the reality. So Maya Aparhita Jnana, they go for logical, reasonable, rational things and activities. Because the real jnana is stolen away or hidden. And the final is Asuram Bhavam. Asuram Bhavam means professors of atheism. They're convinced that a God-centered life has no value. A life that is on the basis of or centered around capitalism in one sense is meaningful. But they cannot see that you can have a God-centered life with material success. It's possible. Right, because spiritual success brings material success. But that's not the path they want to take. Because there's a prerequisite for it. You have to be God-centered. So they want material success without anything to do with God. They will speak against it. They will convince others against it. They make it their life's mission to help others not become foolish and indoctrinated in this whole God-centered garbage. That's the ideology that fires them up. So Krishna says that these four kinds of people are covered by ignorance in these ways. And he calls them Dushkriti. Because ignorance makes us do things that don't bring benefit to us or to anyone else. Sukriti means where there is benefit. Benefit on a broader sense. In a broader sense. So Prabhupada says, they would never accept Vishnu as the Supreme and surrender unto him. Hiranyakashipu naturally became increasingly angry that his son was being influenced by the camp of the enemies. I don't want these children to be influenced. This is his worry or insecurity. His worry is, I'm saying it differently now, his worry is that his son, who he loves very much, who he named Prahlada, the word Khlada means pleasure or love, and Prahlada means intense love. So it means that this is the boy that I intensely love. And I want to bequeath the entire universe to him. And now his mind is being spoiled by Narada? No. Narada Muni has a reputation. Because Narada Muni did the same with my grandfather, right? Daksha. Daksha's daughters are Diti and Aditi, aren't they? And Diti's son is Hiranyakashipu. So he knows what happened previously. My grandfather had 10,000 sons and Narada took them away, first batch. Then Daksha had another 1,000 sons, the Shavalashvas. Narada intervened at the right time and took them also away. Told them, don't get into all this materialistic life, just join. Become renounced. So Daksha had a plan. Next time I'm going to have children and Narada should not interfere. I'm going to have daughters. That's why Narada Muni won't come. And he had daughters. And went on populating the world through them, or the universe through them. So Hiranyakashipu knows there is a history with Narada Muni's intervention. So he doesn't want Narada Muni anywhere near the children. Tomorrow he's going to give advice what to do. Anyway, any questions or comments? Anything you'd like to add, Pritusha Prabhu? Anyone? Here.
Hare Krishna. Chai. Thank you for the class. Nice to see you, Prabhu. I was thinking that generally the reason why we can make such a strong statement about those who are atheistic or those who are demoniac in nature is because we have some sort of connection with an absolute perspective. In the material world, generally people don't have connection to any sort of absolute perspective. So then everything goes, everyone is okay. But when you have some shelter and absolute knowledge, then from that perspective you can say, okay, this is good, this is not good. So then it's very clear what's good, what's not. But things become a little bit more subtle when you're dealing with, I don't want to use the word good or bad, but rather option A or option B within the realm of absolute knowledge, right? And that's why one time when Prabhupada was giving class, he made this point very heavily that how do you actually decide what is right or what is wrong? Because even shastras are interpreted differently by different people. So he quoted this verse, Mahajanayana Patasakanta, the truth lives in the heart of great souls. And I'm just wondering for someone... great souls can act in different ways. So for someone who's like over here, like, you know, I would consider myself to be in the position of, you could say, like a muda, one who has to follow just what is told to him because he doesn't have the discernment or the access to the width of what scriptures are saying or the history of a tradition to actually decide for himself. Like you were saying, to have one's own standing or one's own perspective. He's sort of helplessly just having to follow the... So then what is someone at that level supposed to do when he sees, like, you know, multiplicity of opinions between those who he considers have access to such absolute perspectives, and there's disagreement or there's different ways of doing things? Is he just to follow his own faith, or should he try to step back and try to see each opinion and weigh it against the light of what he has understood from scriptures? What's the right approach?
In the material world, there's no conception of right or wrong per se. Dvaite bhadra bhadra sakala manodharma. It's a concoction, it's a mental concoction, the sense of right and wrong. Once you come to Krishna, once any one of us comes to Krishna, there also the right or wrong paradigm doesn't apply necessarily. The right or wrong will be in terms of violating Vedic instructions. Now, if there are two or more persons that are giving different instruction, there is no harm in following any one of them, because it's not wrong, it's different. So there is variety here, because there is variety there. And each person is inspired by Krishna according to their connection with Him and their particular set of qualities that drive them. So there is nothing wrong. There is not like, should I follow Krishna this way or should I follow Krishna this way? The answer is, either way, if you're following Krishna, that's all that matters. And in this way, I have a set of realizations waiting for me, and in this path, I have a set of realizations waiting for me. With one's own development of Krishna consciousness, one's ability to ascertain or distinguish, I know this may not be very good, or this other path may be very helpful, also develops. Then, with maturity, one is not looking for others to say what to do. One is looking to others to confirm or deny or support or advice. When we are very young, others make decisions for us. And when they make decisions for us, it brings within us a culture of seeing, oh, in that circumstance, that was the decision. In this circumstance, something else was the decision. For children, you make decisions. For adults, we don't. We ask, what are you thinking? What is inspiring you? Have you thought about this? What about the pitfall there? What about that concern? Have you thought through these things? And then, hey, make your decision and learn something from it. But the ability, the maturity comes when we learn to follow instruction first, because from that we learn. And hopefully the person in persons instructing will see, they're able to see the prudence in this decision versus that. And then we will see them behave so. Next time such a situation comes, they will say, previously when that circumstance was there that looked similar, I was asked to do this, this is what I'm going to do, and see what comes from it. But right from the young age, if you tell a little child, a five-year-old child, decide on your own, it's not good for them. Now, it's easier to see a child because their body is also small. But in devotional life, our bodies may be grown up, but our subtle bodies may still be smaller or immature in devotional perspective. So then that same process happens. by the spiritual master, and then the spiritual master is sufficiently confident that now my disciple can manage himself or herself and will come when there is a real challenge. Now in the case of Arjuna, because whenever such questions come up, for me the picture that flashes is the 7th chapter of the 1st canto. Here's Arjuna. It's one of my favorite stories. Arjuna is in this severe dilemma, and everyone who's superior to him is giving him almost contradictory advice. Krishna, he says, well, if you were to kill him, you would not violate dharma. Yudhishthira says, forgiveness is such a virtue, you should give it up. You should forgive him. Bhima says, kill him. That would be the right thing to do as a kshatriya, which is also the truth. And then there is Draupadi, muchyatam, muchyatam, please let him go because I am suffering as a mother, his mother will suffer. What to do? All the right instructions. Then they have to find how best to act in a way that seems to appease everyone. And Krishna then says, I was actually testing you. Oh, Shukadev, in that chapter 7, so Suta Goswami says, Krishna was testing Arjuna. Now in this case, in the Bhagavad Gita, after speaking, there's a joke, right, that one devotee jokes, that he met one person for book distribution, or during book distribution. And was saying, please take the Bhagavad Gita. And the man said, no, I've read the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, I like the Bhagavad Gita very much. So this person asked, really? So what is it in the Bhagavad Gita that you like very much? He said, in one chapter, Krishna says, Yatha Icchasi Tatha Kuru, do as you like. I like that very much. I like that instruction very much. Do as you like. Now, if you see the tone of Krishna's voice in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, he says, Klaibhyam mas magam of partha. Give up your impotence. So it's very directed. What is this? You're behaving like a eunuch, basically. And then he comes and says, at the end, do as you like. Isn't there a difference? So the idea is that Krishna has ascertained that during the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has developed from running away to... And how does it confirm when Arjuna says, Karishye vachanam tava, nashta moha smritra labdhava. So there is development. If right in the beginning, first chapter, after Arjuna cried, Gandivam is falling away. Roma harshasya jay, not Roma harsha, but my pores of my body are drying up. My skin is burning. My tongue is parched. The Gandiva is slipping. My knees are weak. And Krishna had said, Yathechasi tata kuru. Arjuna would have run away. So he was told. So there is room for directed instruction, and then there is room for, hey, on your own, decide. Here's good instruction, now you decide. I liked what Kalakanta Prabhu had said when he had come. In devotional life, in one sense, there is no wrong or right decision. Everything has just consequences. And it's up to you what consequence you want to live with. Is that all right, Himanshu? Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned two qualities that define ignorant persons.
Yeah, there are more. They have a long list of great qualities, but two I said, yes.
Right, one of which was this bandwagon effect, whereby we do something just because everybody else is doing it, and it seems like the thing to do.
Yeah.
The other one was we just do something out of inertia because we've been doing it for a while, so we just think, oh, I might as well keep doing it. If I stop doing it, then I will lose all my purpose.
Right.
My question is, how do we prevent this mentality of ignorance from kind of creeping into our devotional service?
Oh, into devotional service. Yeah, there is bandwagon effect even within devotional life. And our Guru Puja song, Narottam Das Thakur describes, that the spiritual master, hearing from the spiritual master, not just once in a while or occasionally, but every day, hearing spiritual instructions from the spiritual masters removes the bandwagon effect, or removes us from the bandwagon effect. This is called Chakshur Unmilitam Yena. We open our eyes, because when our eyes are closed, everything is dark. The eyes are closed by the curtain of ignorance, or by the darkness of ignorance around us. So when we are able to open our eyes and see reality, then we get off the bandwagon. And that comes from hearing. We see through the world, is the phrase is, we see the world through our ears. Because one who sees a rope and thinks of it as a snake, the spiritual master will say, that's a rope, it's not a snake. This is Maya, it's not real. That is something else. What may conflict is our sense of reality, and in that too, we may be very convinced that that is a snake. Then there is a dialogue. There's this question and answer. How do you know that that is not a snake? Can you please tell me? I will describe. But I still am afraid. I think I am afraid. Then another instruction, etc., for example. Does that help? Okay. It's called Shravanam. Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayantasto Yavadrani Vidhunoti Sruhat Satam. Krishna also helps remove that curtain of ignorance when he sees that someone is genuinely hearing from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. At the beginning of your class, you mentioned that Prahlad called Hiranyakashipu best of demons.
Yeah. Nasadu manne asuravarya dehinam.
Now, I was kind of worried about, kind of wondered about that over the years, because I thought devotees were supposed to be respectful. So I was kind of confused. You know, isn't that offensive? But Hiranyakashipu, you mentioned, you know, he took it as a compliment. So my question is kind of in relation to that. Like, you would see Prabhupada even when, or great devotees, but I'll use Prabhupada in this case, even when outsiders tried to offend, you know, Prabhupada, like, they called the movement, you know, you're just brainwashing. So Prabhupada took that as a compliment. Oh, thank you, you know, we're trying to create clean brains among devotees, or the devotees will show Prabhupada a newspaper and say they're talking, you know, negatively about us. Probably like, this is great, you know, they're promoting us, you know, free promotion, free publicity. So it seems that Uttama Adhikari, he kind of sees everyone as, you know, equal, basically. Like, he doesn't distinguish, like Prahlad Maharaj mentioned, friends and enemies are the same. So it appears that in our situation, even if we're not Uttama Adhikaris, it appears that we kind of have to kind of come to that platform, even if we're not there, to just have some sort of peace of mind, because someone says something to us, our whole day is ruined. You know, we all their enemies, you know, so, like you were mentioning, you know, someone says something that we don't like, then we become, our whole day is ruined, we can't chant. And it appears that we kind of at least have to, can you explain that? Like, come to some sort of Uttama Adhikari, even if we're not there, you know, view everyone as friends and not enemies. So can you explain that? just for our peace of mind, basically.
First, the caution that if we artificially try to act like an Uttamadhikari, it may work for about 5 minutes and then it'll go away. Because we may be very inspired from Prahlad Maharaj's words and we may say, oh, no one is my enemy, I have loving feelings for everyone, and all something Krishna will send our way that shatters that misconception very quickly. So in general, trying to act like an Uttamadhikari is dangerous. What is safer is to act in our position with appreciation for, wow, look at that. Prahlad Maharaj actually doesn't feel animosity towards anyone? That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, in our life, we can be Prahlad Maharaj-like if in a particular circumstance, we can consider what our response could be on the basis of, I'm inspired by hearing about Prahlad Maharaj right now. That's the whole theme that's happening at the temple. I'm hearing Bhagavatam. Is there a way I can respond as Prahlad Maharaj without the feeling of animosity? And what would be the best way, given my stature means, you know, wherever I'm at in my Krishna consciousness, what's the best way to respond without feelings of animosity? In Prahlad Maharaj's case, he never went and said to his father, we need to sit down and talk. What you're doing is bothering me. He didn't say. We may say, you know, I'm feeling hurt by your words or actions. Can you please help me see it different? This communication, it may be different, but it's the same spirit though. Because I'm not holding feelings of animosity towards the other person. I may act differently though. I may respond differently. It's the same spirit. That may be more real for us that, oh, Prahlad Maharaj's mercy is on me that I can even see it this way. Or Prahlad never went around telling others, my father is such a demon, he's making my life miserable. So we may not go to others and say, ah, this guy is making my life miserable, etc. It is like that. An Uttamadhikari, we cannot, I won't even say imitate, it's a little beyond our reach, but we can appreciate, wow, look at that. Someday, if I can get there, that'd be great.
You mentioned that last point, someday if I could get there. So this kind of reminds me of a follow-up question. Like Krishna says, I'm the ability in man, mm-hmm. in chapter 7, and strip not the strong, etc. So you were mentioning, so how important is it to, let's say, pray? Because he's our, whatever abilities we have, even if it's the ability to tolerate or forgive, you know, that's Krishna's ability. So how important is it to pray, Krishna, let me please pass a test this particular day and keep constantly improving? How important is it to pray? Right. Give me the strength or ability.
In market research, that's called a loaded question, meaning the answer is obvious. How important is it to pray? It's very important to pray.
How do we keep this in mind all the time? Because sometimes we're caught up in a, you know, the ways of material nature, we kind of forget these things, like this most important part.
Depends on our Krishna consciousness. If our Krishna consciousness in that we are alert, it says, Bandhu moi savadhana mate. Be alert is the point. And many times, as this Prabhu is saying, we're creatures of habit. We're accustomed to reacting and act, whatever, responding on the basis of habit. A person who's alert will say, well, that's a habit. I'm trying to cultivate a different habit. And if you're not alert, then that base nature takes over. And I believe that in many of our lives as sadhakas, our purification comes after the fact, when we correct things after the fact. Because we don't have the ability to rightfully act in the moment. We say and do some things, and then we think about it. I said, oh, I could have done it different. Then we go back and we say, please forgive me, or I meant to say it that way, it didn't come out so well. actually what I meant was this. However, and we feel relief from that, that's purification. So for us, most of it is, as we say, hindsight. Before things become our nature. Our real nature manifests. Okay, anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. It's one of my favorite verses, the Sadhu Manye Suravarya Dehinam. I mean, what courage to say that to his father. Wow.